Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kenya. With me, as always, is Eric Schlipp from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, Lions triumphant in their second preseason game, 24-23 over the Kansas City Chiefs. Jake Bates was the hero. See it nailing with a 43-yard field goal at the end to put the Lions over the top. Meaningless getting a win in the preseasons, whatever.
It's meaningless, but I felt better after the game. Like
What?
I felt like I hadn't had that taste of victory in a while, and it was nice to feel that again, even though it was meaningless, like you say.
Yeah, I mean, and Hendon Hooker let him, late in the game. Like, we saw a lot of positive things.
Hendon Hooker
Any positive mojo is good, I guess.
Hendon throws two incompletions to start, and then he goes 12 of 13 after that. So that was, and then he rushes for a touchdown as well. So it was good afternoon for him.
Early on, playing against the Kansas City ones, things were okay, and then things wouldn't go so great. Things would fall apart in a hurry. But I don't know what you could even take out of that.
Yeah, I mean, look, I walked away feeling a little bit better, or well, maybe even a little bit, like maybe moderately better than about the backups than I had, the previous week. Because I thought against the Giants they looked sloppy, the reserves didn't look great at any level, and then against Kansas City I thought like the guys who are probably in line to make the team, I thought they all looked pretty good, and that gave me, a lot more assurances that, what I was seeing at camp was translating to the field, and that I felt like they were making progress. So, I'm not expecting the same type of outcome here in game three against the Steelers this Saturday at 1 o'clock, because it's again probably going to be all backups. But even some of the backups like that are some of them are dealing with injuries, and so it's going to be, I think, pretty thin. It's going to be a bunch of guys playing, and of the guys that actually play, we might be talking about 20 of them, making the roster. Maybe that might be about it. The rest of the guys will probably be, fighting for practice squad spots, or maybe showing off for other teams.
All right, and we're going to be talking about that as we get into the podcast today. Taking a look at what the 53-man roster is going to be shaping up as. Maybe the first thing we want to hit is Sports Illustrated, who put out, has a cover. It's got the Lions on it, St. Brown and Sewell and Jared Goff, and they like him. What do you think about all this?
So I think the first thing is we should mention is that this isn't just like a regional cover. This is a national cover. It's their football preview episode. Big feature on the Lions, and I think it lines up with most of what we've seen throughout the offseason. There's a lot of people nationally buying into the hype around the Lions. They had a nice offseason on top of a building 3 years of success where we've seen them incrementally get better, and that looked like with a good offseason on top of that, people are expecting improvements. And when you're talking about a team that was in the NFC Championship, and you're talking about them looking like they got even better, that's why people keep talking about Super Bowls. And Sports Illustrated was saying they thought the Lions had a chance to win it. And so I know that's going to make a lot of people uncomfortable, but this is the world we live in now. They've been a good team for
Year and a
what?
half.
Yeah, at least a year and a half, right? And they look like they've gotten better. Their defense is looking better. The moves that they made sense. Young guys are getting paid. It's like it just it's very much a blueprint on how to turn a franchise around. And now it's a matter of can you sustain it? And I think victory is gonna they're gonna have a lot of chance they're gonna have a chance to put up a lot of victories this year. And I think the hype's warranted. I'm excited about what I've seen. I'm gonna lean into it, even if it's there's gonna be games that it hurts, but I'm going to go in expecting them to win. I'd say more games than not.
Well, that should be the minimum expectation that they're going to win more games than not. I did stumble over mentioning about the Sports Illustrated cover because I was going to say they're picking them to win the Super Bowl. Not exactly true. Two of the writers, Greg Bishop and Connor Orr, picked the Lions to win the Super Bowl. Going back in time, and this has got to be a this a first. I don't. Maybe there's some crackpots out there in previous years that chucked the Lions into the Super Bowl. I don't think so. Not in our lifetimes. I'm sure, maybe the Sports Illustrated in 1957 said the Lions are going to, maybe the Sports Illustrated 1962 said the Lions were going to win. Who knows? But it's certainly not the late 70s, the early 80s, maybe the 90s. Somebody threw one in there that they had them as some dark horse where it's like, well, like everybody's Cowboys, 49ers, or Packers. And then somebody's like, nope, I'm going with the Detroit Lions. I don't know. I can't think of it.
I feel like at one point in like 2014, there was some talk about when they got off to that really hot start.
That's
There
6 and
was
0, right?
talk about, yeah, like they were like, oh my gosh, these guys look for real and
Yeah, but
could,
that's not the
but
preseason.
right, that's where I was going with it. But yeah, that's a reaction to what was happening over the first 6 weeks as opposed to ahead of time. And it's interesting because Sports Illustrated isn't alone. Daniel Jeremiah was on the Rich Eisen show, and Rich asked him of the NFC playoff teams, which one is going to go further in the playoffs than they did last year. And he said, I think the Lions have the best shot to do that. And he's like, I know that means I'm saying they're going to the Super Bowl, but
It's one
that's,
more game.
I think they're the best ones. And so it's a common, it's becoming more of a common theme. Because, look, I think when it comes down to it, the Chiefs are always going to be the favorites because of the run that they've had over the last several years. And the Niners have proven that they belong. And I think the Lions, what the Lions have done, it's just, it's an infectious, sense of momentum that people want to grasp onto. And it's a fun story. It's a exciting story. And it's easy for people beyond Detroit to fall in love with this team. I mean, what Hard
Well, yeah, who
Knocks
out
team?
there hates the Lions?
Yeah, it's
Everybody's
well.
favorite team has done is beat up on the Lions for the last 20 some years. Why would anybody hate the Lions?
Well, I mean, other than the other NFC North teams, right?
Yeah, even then, like they, it, if you go over the last 25 years, like Lions never won a division championship. Yeah, okay, they beat us occasionally, right? Like they can't hate the Lions too much. There's no Packers fan out there that really hates. They hate the Bears. They hate the Vikings. They look at the Lions with mild disdain.
I think that's changed though over the
Well, it's
last
changing,
couple of
yeah.
years for sure. I really think Hard Knocks was a great thing for the Lions. The timing of when Hard Knocks happened, the way that the story was told, the season that they were able to have after a tough start, like it was very easy to fall in love with them that season from a national perspective, and then to follow that up with the season they had last year. And it's you just want to, people want to, can't jump on board fast enough. So it's exciting. It's an exciting time to be a Detroit Lions fan. It's an exciting time to cover the team. And it's unfamiliar territory for everyone to see these covers and these predictions talk about them as being amongst the favorites to go to the Super Bowl.
Do you put like so Sports Illustrated puts it on their cover, but what's Sports Illustrated anymore?
Well, I think
Used to be a
there's,
huge deal, but a
yeah,
lot of the younger folks that are listening to this podcast, whatever.
I still think there's a there's an aura around the cover of Sports Illustrated. I
Sure.
think that carries some weight still, while the publication itself has, lost some of its luster. The cover of Sports Illustrated still means something. It's like the Madden cover. Like the Madden cover, like it's important to a subset of people. And so with Sports Illustrated, like you can go, if you go into a, anybody who's like a collector, like inevitably going to see, probably newspaper front pages of the newspapers with these guys, newspaper clippings of your favorite team doing something, or, SI covers, and that might be framed and hanging on the wall. I'm interested to, I want to acquire that SI cover. I think it's a cool cover. I think it captures this time in Lions history very well. And I could find a spot on my wall for it, that's for sure.
Oh boy. All right, let's start digging in here. You know, position by position, as always. Quarterbacks first. Who's going to be playing on Saturday? What that will be pointing that out. Does it matter if they're playing in the game Saturday? Who's making the 53-man roster? Those are the three pieces we're going to be looking at there. Quarterbacks, Goff, Hooker, Sudfeld, Fromm. What are we going to see on Saturday?
The plan is to start Hooker. Yeah, that's what they want to
Finally.
do. They wanted to start him in week two, but because of the concussion, they didn't think it was fair to the rest of the players that were starting as well. They didn't want to put them on the field, the quarterback that they hadn't been practicing with over the past week. And so they're going to start Hooker in this game. They're going to give him as many snaps as they think are necessary. So that could mean Hooker plays some snaps, comes off the field, Sudfeld comes on, and then Hooker closes the game out. It could mean Hooker plays a half. It could mean he plays more than a half. But the plan is for him to start. After that, they're going to turn to Nate Sudfeld, and if there's time, they'll give Jake Fromm a
If
look.
there's time.
Yeah, but look, there's not going to be time, folks.
Right.
there's not. I know. I don't know how many Jake Fromm stands we have out here in our listening audience, but I would be pretty surprised if he got a look in camp or in preseason game three here. It's really going to be Hooker versus Sudfeld. I don't know if like you can definitively say one of them is quarterback two, because what we're hearing out of Lions camp compared to what we're seeing in person are two very different things. Because I think Hooker looks very much like quarterback two. Like it's a very clear difference in my mind. Hooker has the upside, Hooker has the intangibles, Hooker has the he's got a little bit more pop and explosiveness. And but Nate's the veteran. And Dan Campbell, it basically he said this week that
Loves
Nate is
veterans.
he yeah, he said Nate's the guy that's steady, and we know. And we think he's ahead of Hooker right now. And but Hooker is, he's got a chance to prove that he can be, quarterback too. But right now, Nate's ahead. And that kind of lends itself to, are they going to keep two quarterbacks or are they going to keep three? Because I think in my mind, like what he's this was more like a message to Hooker, like, hey, show us that you're good enough to be quarterback too by yourself. Because if you're not, then we're going to keep Nate. You're going to force us to keep three quarterbacks, and then it's going to be one less roster spot on the rest, somewhere else. They're going to have to take a spot from somebody else, and I don't think they want to do that if they can avoid it. So it sure seems like they're leaning towards three quarterbacks. At the same time, I do think they're open to Hooker wowing them enough to maybe just keep two, but man, it sure sounded like he was talking about keeping three quarterbacks, which I think would
Well,
be it'd be difficult with roster construction.
really? See, now I'm in the different, and I get it, and that's probably what they want to do. I'd rather keep three. This team's a team that can make it to the Super Bowl. Why? Because Goff can get hurt. There's a chance, right? I'm not saying there's a good chance or a bad chance. There is a chance. They have some depth there. You're because. It's going to be hinted. It's
Well,
either going to be Hooker and Goff as two quarterbacks, or you're going to keep Sudfeld as the third one. If something happens to Goff here, you'd have two guys that are still experienced, and just in case something happened to Hooker or something happened to Sudfeld, you have the other guy that knows the offense. I don't know. I'm getting more conservative now in how I feel about the Lions. Because when they were terrible, it's like, hey, just go with two quarterbacks because you're going to lose that anyways without the starters. So bringing some guy off the street to be the third quarterback. It, like, but now I don't know. I would be concerned. Like, it, they're not going to get rid of Hooker, but if they got rid of Sudfeld, he'll end up somewhere else, and I don't know. Lions could end up scrambling if something bad happened.
It's possible that he ends up somewhere else because, but I also think the Lions could try and offer him a little bit more money to stick around the practice squad and try and keep him, you know? Yeah, it's like, I don't know. Like, okay, so here's the quote. He said, Campbell says, Hooker is a young developing quarterback and he needs reps and he needs time. Right now, I'm sorry, and Nate right now has the upper hand because he's played more. He's been in it more, he's seen it more. And so with that, that would tell you there's a good chance that we could keep three, meaning keep three quarterbacks on the 53-man roster. So, am I 100% or am I going to say it's 100% certain right now? No, but that's kind of what you look at. So, he's basically saying right now they're looking to keep in three unless something changes in this last game. So, for if you're making a 53-man roster projection, you might want to consider keeping three.
All right, running backs: Montgomery, Gibbs, Reynolds, Vaki, Jefferson, Knight, Bunk. Who are we going to
So,
see Saturday?
yeah, so Wancy Montgomery and Gibbs is still dealing with the hamstring.
Hobbled.
He is expected to return to practice after the Steelers game, which means like maybe as soon as Sunday. They're going to do like a practice on Sunday because they're home for the Steelers game, right? So they'll have a little small practice on Sunday with the guys as they work their way towards the cutdowns. So cutdowns will be on Tuesday. And they'll probably start cutting players on Sunday and Monday as well. But they'll do a couple little practices on Sunday and Monday just to kind of like do some last final check-ins as they determine their last couple of roster spots. But Gibbs is expected to return around that time. And so, but he won't play in the game. Craig Reynolds was injured on Wednesday. So he was, that was the last practice available to the media, last training camp practice of the off season. He had a lower body injury. He left the field, did not return, so he could be questionable to play. He's started each of the first two games, but it's possible with him being pretty much a solidified RB3, it's very possible that they just say, "Look, we're not even going to risk you. You're going to sit as well." That would be my guess is that he probably sits too. That would mean Vaki starts. After maybe Jefferson. Now
No good
Jefferson.
for you. He's Vaki's precious cargo to you. You don't want him getting a
Oh,
lot of reps.
to me, dude, when they started throwing the ball to him and the 2-minute warning in the Kansas City Chiefs game, oh, I was in, that was just heaven for me. I was loving that. Now Jamar Jefferson missed the Chiefs game with an undisclosed injury, but he came back on Tuesday, was limited, and then looked like he was in full on Wednesday. That's good for him because he's trying to fight for like an RB5 type job. Possible he gets the start over Vaki. They may want to turn to the veteran or, you know, or a guy with a couple more years under his belt. But Vaki or Jefferson will probably start. Zonovan Knight will get some run, and Jake Funk will also get some run. So those are the four guys I'm expecting to play. Vaki's in, right? Vaki is RB4. He'll have a chance to take over for Craig Reynolds as and be RB3 as the season wears on, but Vaki's still got some experience to gain, I think, before he's ready to do that. Jefferson has had a good camp, and while the injury has kind of put him out of people's minds, I do think he's still pushing to show that he can be, you know, he can convince the staff to keep a fifth running back. If they keep a third quarterback, though, I think keeping five running backs is going to be really hard. So Jefferson's going to be in kind of a tough spot. I know there's Zonovan Knight fans out there. I like Zonovan Knight. I don't think he's in a great spot, and so I think he's going to be fighting for that as well. So could be very much that Jefferson and Zonovan Knight are maybe fighting for, you know, practice squad type of positions. It's hard to tell, but it's going to be tough for any of those guys to make the roster. They'll all have a really good chance to show what they got. Special teams will be key for all of them. But yeah, I fully expect it to be, you know, Monty Gibbs, Reynolds, Vaki, and then that might be it on the 53.
Even with the new kickoff rules.
Yeah, it's just it gets really tricky when you start talking about skill positions. I do think with the receiver group struggling, they may only keep four receivers. And if that's the case, maybe you can talk yourself into keeping five. But if you're also keeping four tight ends, because and one of them's going to be like a fullback, I think there's a way to make it work. It just gets it's you'd have to sacrifice in some other areas. I'm not sure you want to sacrifice.
All right, flipping over the receiver group. This is still the biggest question mark, even coming out of camp.
Yeah.
St. Brown, Williams, that's Jameson Williams, Raymond Peoples-Jones, Alexander, Calhoun, Tom Kennedy, Isaiah Williams, Fountain, Caden Davis. So there's, that's 10 guys there. Like you said, maybe they only keep four, maybe it's five.
Yeah, and we should note that Tre'Quan Smith ends up on injured reserve this week, so
And
they're
he wasn't
down to
making
11 guys. He was not making the list anyways. Yeah, that's accurate. I expect St. Brown, Jameson, and Khalif to all sit again and let the remaining seven guys just kind of
Duke it
duke it
out.
out. Yeah. So Peoples-Jones
Isaiah
started.
Williams. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to lead you. Isaiah Williams is the new time. He's out Tom Kennedying. Tom
Yeah.
Kennedy, and Tom Kennedy's
Yes.
doing his normal Tom Kennedy thing.
Yeah, last week it was Peoples-Jones, Caden Davis, and Kennedy that started. Peoples-Jones can f he continues to flash at practice, but then one catch in the game, and that's like about all he's doing. And so if he wants to become the guy, he's going to need to show us more than just a catch. He's going to really need to like put together a, more than just one catch a game. He's going to have to string together a few of them. And so Peoples-Jones will get they'll probably get the start at the X. He'll be challenged by Dreese Fountain. They're hoping one of those two guys are able to win the job and make them feel comfortable kind of as wide receiver four, but neither of them have really done it. They got one game left to prove it. It's kind of like do or die at this stage. I do think the Lions will keep are hoping one of those two steps up and shows them something, but at the same time, I think they're keeping their options open. Maybe a potential trade or maybe someone that gets cut at roster decision time. So Isaiah Williams is the interesting one because he's been the most productive receiver in the preseason, bar none. Like he's had the most catches, the most yards, the most production. He's looked the flashiest. He's shown burst. There's a lot of things to like about Caden, or I'm sorry, about Isaiah Williams. The hard part with Isaiah Williams is two of your top three receivers can play in the slot, and Isaiah Williams only plays in the slot. So keep an eye on Isaiah Williams maybe getting snaps outside. If he does, how is he productive? Is he not? And can he do enough as a third slot receiver to justify keeping, him as wide receiver four or maybe wide receiver five? I don't know. I know he's a fun story, but he is, like you said, he's kind of reminiscent of Tom Kennedy and what's happened with Tom the last several years. Looked great in the preseason and then ends up just on the practice squad, right?
Yeah, he'll end up playing weeks 14, 15, 16, 17, squeaks his way under the roster.
Yeah, I do think Isaiah is a guy that they don't want to let go of. At the same time, with roster construction being challenging and only having so many spots, you're only going to put guys on your roster for two reasons. Either they're going to be a starter, they're going to be a backup that plays multiple spots and special teams, or you're going to end up, storing them on the practice squad. Williams would have to show he has more range than just as a slot receiver, or he's never going to be active on game days. And if he's never going to be active on game days, then he's just a project. And if you want to keep one or two players as projects, that's okay. You can do that. You've seen them do that in years past. Broderick Martin, Stephen Gilmore. But this year, you've already got Giovanni Manu, and then you have potentially Christian Mahogany. And now if you keep Isaiah, I mean, you can't keep three developmental guys just because you like them. You're gonna have to risk them to you're gonna have to risk somebody to waivers and then hope you can bring them back to the practice squad. And in all honesty, slot receivers, there's always a lot of them out there. And so I think he's a fun player. I think he's someone they want to keep around. I also think he's got a hard it's gonna be difficult for him to make the 53 because he doesn't do much beyond the slot.
I think Peoples Jones makes it because that, like you said, he had one catch. That's all he's going to do in regular season games. That's all they'll be at. He's already in mid-season form.
Yeah, so what they so Dan Campbell, when he talked about the receiver group this week, he basically said Cleve Raymond is clearly the third best receiver
Right.
on the team. Like
No
he's
surprise.
right. But because Khalif is a dynamic punt returner and because of the situations that they use him in, they really only want to give him like 20, 25 snaps a game. They don't want to give him 45, 60 snaps. And they don't want to put him in a position where he's going to have to do the dirty work going over the middle, contested catches, stuff like that, that an X wide receiver does. So they're going to need a body that can go over the middle. They're going to need a body that can give them 45 to 60 snaps. And I mean, right now that's Peoples Jones. And I mean, maybe it's Fountain, but it sure looks like it's Peoples Jones. He may get, if he ends up winning that job, he may have 60 snaps a game. He may get three targets. You know what I mean? Like that might be it. Might one catch, three targets, 15 yards. Like that might be what he does on. And honestly, that's not a whole ton more than what Josh Reynolds did because there's so many other weapons on the offense, but they need that big body to go over the middle, to draw defenders, to have that, you got to have that endurance and that athleticism to keep the defense accountable. And if you don't have that body and Peoples Jones can't be that guy, they're gonna have to find somebody else. But right now, I agree with you. I think Peoples Jones is probably in the driver's seat, even though I'm less enthusiastic about that than maybe I was when they traded for him.
All right, any other thoughts on the receiver group?
No, I think that's an interesting battle, but realistically, we may be talking about like one spot.
Seven
And
guys for one spot.
yeah, seven guys, one spot, and realistically, it may be down, it may be two guys. And then of the remaining five, who can one of them do enough to convince them to keep a fifth guy? But like I know people like Caden Davis and he's got some speed and he had that big touchdown against the Chiefs, but like he's mostly like a Y. And that's kind of what Khalif is. And Khalif kind of is like that backup at what behind Jamo and that backup behind Amon-Ra. And so they need a big body. And Caden Davis isn't quite that. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see if he can convince me otherwise. But right now, I'm not. I don't. I think his chances are pretty hard. In my mind, it's a two horse race between Peoples Jones and Fountain.
All right, tight end group, Laporta, Wright, Zylstra, Mitchell, Hesse, McKean, Laporta, Wright,
Yeah. No,
oh,
go
wait.
ahead. I was just gonna say Laporta has a hamstring. So
Well,
he's
but he's not going to play Saturday anyways.
right.
This is not, all these hamstring injuries are not good, Eric. Hamstrings,
Well,
no good.
I do think that they're okay. Let me back up. A week ago, Laporta was running right in front of me, cutting, making moves. He looked like he was fine. That was a week ago. I think they're just not. There's no reason to push him, right? Like they don't, there's no reason to try and force him to get back because he's going to have a big role. And he's another guy like Gibbs that they're expecting to be back on Sunday. Again, that's purposeful that it's on Sunday because they don't want to stress him any more than they need to. And so they'll get him back Sunday. They'll run him through a couple light practices and then everybody's ready to go start the regular season type of thing. So Yeah, no Laporta, no Wright. For me, this is a 3-player race for potentially 2 spots. I think Hesse is in a really good spot because he's been playing fullback, and he's the only one that's been playing fullback. And I think that puts him in a really good spot. And that would leave Zylstra and Mitchell duking it out. Zylstra has been the guy they've leaned on a lot of camp. At the same time, I don't think he's really run away with the job like most people were kind of expecting. So Zitchell Mitchell or Zylstra Mitchell battle is going to be one to watch. I don't think McCune is in the bat this. I think he's a little bit further down the depth chart. And the fact that they're not using him at fullback really is I think tells us everything we need to know about where his spot is. So very possible Zylstra Mitchell or Hesse, two of those guys are going to make it. We'll figure out which two after this game. So that's an interesting battle.
It's hard to think that it's not going to be Mitchell Zylstra. And I know they've been using Hesse, they've been using
Sure.
him in the backfield, but like Zylstra's useful. I mean, he was
No, I
out
agree.
last year, but he was useful back in 2022. And Mitchell, like, I don't think they're going to give up on him yet because he's been had a bunch of injuries. I don't know. I don't
It
know.
what's
This
one
is
of the
a weird one.
one of the interesting things that people have I've had multiple people ask me at different points over the past couple of weeks is, could Zylstra play the X role? And what I will say to that is, one, I think he could situationally take snaps out at the X. He's not a guy that's going to play the X 60 snaps a game, though. There was a reason he went from being a college receiver to a NFL tight end, right? Like, he just wasn't fast enough to play the X. He was his body was not the right type. Like, there's a reason they moved him inside. Okay, the Lions have not even hinted at using him at the X. Could they put him out there? Sure, just like they could put Laporta out there, but it's going to be like couple snaps a game type of thing, not the volume that I think the Lions are looking for. But if you are keeping Zylstra Mitchell, I would totally get that, by the way. I would totally understand why they would do that. But if they are going to keep those two, you're probably turning to Brock Wright then to play some fullback, which I don't think is that bad of an idea. He's shown some in the past. I think he's capable. And you're going to lean on those top two guys anyway. So why not see? So most beat writers think Hesse's going to be in. I'm with you, though. I do think he's not as locked in as a lot of people are saying.
Don't forget they have Malcolm Rodriguez to play fullback too.
They do. They do.
I don't know
And,
if have you seen him there during training camp at all?
but he's been hurt,
Well, that's
the
right.
last couple of weeks. So he's supposed to come back as well, but yeah, we haven't really seen a lot of that because of the injury.
That's right. All right. Offensive line: Taylor Decker, Graham Glasgow, Frank Ragnow, Kevin Zeitler, Penei Sewell, all penciled in. That's your starting five. You will not see any of them on Saturday, right?
Correct.
This is
Zilch.
definitely not Sewell. Oh,
Yeah.
jeez. Hold your breath, everybody.
Yeah. Foot injury. Basically, he just rolled his ankle. Injured. He's supposed to be good. He should be fine. He definitely. I wouldn't be surprised to see him on the sideline. I also wouldn't be surprised if they were like, "Hey, stay home with your kids." But he should be okay. Zeitler's supposed to return after practice as well, or I'm sorry, after the game as well. Return to practice early next week. Probably see Sewell back next week as well, would be my guess. Again, they're not going to rush anything with him, and none of these guys will play in the game. You're going to go right to your second team for those reps.
Which is probably not Dan Skipper. He's still hurt, right?
Yeah, he has an ankle, rolled that ankle or got rolled up on, I guess I should say, and on a against the Chiefs, and so he is gonna be, expected to return next week. So I think he's probably not gonna play. So that would mean DeMarco
That's fine.
Jones. I think so too. I think he's in a spot where they want him. He's gonna make the roster, and so they just
Yep.
want him to be okay.
They give every snap to Giovanni Manu. Give him every one.
I wouldn't mind it, but my guess is, based on what I saw out of Manu last week, is I think he got kind of gassed in the second half. Like, he only played a half, but I
Tough
feel
it
like he
out.
got kind of gassed, right? I do think they want to give DeMarco Jones a shot too. And then I think they want Colby to get as many reps as possible in case he has to play. So what we saw last week was some DeMarco Jones and then some Giovanni, and then Sorsdahl played every snap on the right at the right tackle spot. So I'm kind of expecting that again. And yeah, DeMarco Jones at left tackle, Colby at right is what I'm expecting to see when the starting offense gets out there.
All right, interior, Ewosika, Aguakun, Nice. Like, as that's going to be your middle three, you would think.
I think it's going to switch around a little bit, though. I think Coyote is going to stay at left guard, but I think they're going to put the what happened at camp this week was Nice pushed back into center, and Iguakin is actually how you pronounce his
Iguakin.
name.
Yeah, I've been
I
screwing
know.
that up. Yep.
So have I. So have I. Oh, dude,
Iguakin. Yeah, I remember that from watching last night. I gotta remember that. I gotta remember how to pronounce his name.
it's I mess it up daily. But yeah, so Iguakin was playing at right guard with the first team this past
Right.
week
Yeah,
because
with Zeidler
Zeitler
out.
was not. Yeah, so I think Iguakin is going to get some run at guard because he's one of those guys where when they're formulating that offensive line, he's kind of a the more you can do type of thing. So it gets really tricky here because you have your starting five, and then you have Skipper and Manu, and then you probably have Sorsdahl. So that gives you eight, right there, right? I think Coyote was a guy that we thought was probably in the next interior guy because of his experience with the team, the fact that he was taking starter snaps for them late last year, including in the playoffs.
Right.
I think all we thought he's in a great spot, but both Nice and Aguakin have played inside at center and at guard, and they have both been getting shots with the starters. Like we never really saw Coyote get a run with the starters at right guard, even though the opportunity was there. And so I do wonder if Nice or Aguakin might be a preferable option as their interior reserve. Here's the trick, though. If Christian Mahogany is also coming back and you pull him off NFI because you want him to be able to practice, he's a project, Manu's a project, and now you've got a third rookie making the roster. You know what I mean? If you keep Iguakin. And that's a hard road because you've got your starting five plus Colby and Skipper, and then three rookies, and two of those rookies are not ready. And so it would take a lot of guts to make that call to say, okay, we're going to go with basically no interior veterans. We're going to go with all of our three young guys, and we're going to keep them all. We're just going to roll. They can do it as long as they stay healthy. If they don't stay healthy, though, that's where it gets really tricky.
Well, they'll get experience in a hurry.
Right. But I do think we thought it sure looked like Coyote's job for a long time, but I do think Iguakin is a legitimate contender for that OL top reserve role.
So that's 10.
Yeah, I think 10 might be the way they do it because you can keep two of them. Two of them are developmental. Now, if Mahogany is not ready and he stays on the NFI, then you can, probably stick with nine. Then you can start talking about adding another offensive skill player. But in my mind, 10 might be the number.
All right.
Now that leaves us with Duke Clemens,
Duke
Brian
Clemens, yeah, Brian
Hudson,
Hudson,
and then
Jake Burton.
yeah, so two of those, Clemens and Hudson, are both UDFA guys as well. I think those guys are all too raw right now. You watch the game back, you see mistakes, you see them not executing blocks properly, or potentially missing assignments, and they just all look like they're struggling here and there more frequently than the guys that we're talking about being in contention for the 53. Now, could they keep one or two of those guys on the practice squad if they can't keep like Neeson and Coyote or Igwokan? Like, if they can't keep two of those guys on the practice squad, I think Clemens or Hudson might have a real shot at, sticking around the practice squad as well, because you've got a developmental guy that can play guard and center, and that's something they're looking for. So I just don't think they're ready. And so first half offensive line, I think that's really going to tell the story of how the offensive line shakes out.
Well, I mean, what we talked about in the offseason, it's Clemens, Hudson, Igwokan, right? Those are the three centers they brought in, UDFAs. They significantly invested in those three guys. And I think it's turning out probably what they planned for. It's that one of them's going to step up. They got the one. The other guy, yeah, maybe they keep one of the other two guys on the practice squad, but I think they got what they wanted out of that move, right?
It was a smart competition.
All right, switch it over to the defensive side of the ball, defensive line. I don't, do you want to just look at the tackles first? Make it easier. Ali McNeil, not going to play. Right? He on the roster. Okay, so Kyle Pecco, who's been playing a lot, Broderick Martin, Mekhi Wingo, Chris Smith. Those are the other four interior traditional interior tackles. We know some of the other guys will play inside if need be.
Yeah, so Reader is expected to potentially come back next week as well, which would really throw make the roster building decision unique, because if he's ready, or at least going to be ready in the first couple of weeks, because remember, if you leave him on the PUP, he has to miss 4 weeks. If you take him off the PUP and put him on the active roster, that means you're hoping he comes back sometime within the first 4 weeks, right? So when they're talking about him returning to practice potentially next week, then that sure sounds like they're saying, hey, we think he'll be ready in the first couple of weeks of the season, which would be a tremendous sign. If that happens, yes, Pecco has been getting a lot of run with the starters and then not playing in the games, which is usually a really good sign for him. I do think Pecco's spot is kind of contingent on when Reader is available. If Reader isn't going to be available the first couple of weeks, or he's going to be limited, absolutely, I think you have to keep Kyle Pecco. And then so maybe you don't play him again in this game, and you just keep him out and say, all right, let's just draw it back. That would leave Broderick Martin and Wingo and Smith as the only three, but that's kind of what they've been running with, for a while
Already.
now.
Yep.
Yeah. Martin and Wingo are both guys that they've invested in, both guys they believe in. And so this is a position where, with Reader, McNeil, Pecco as insurance, and then Martin and Wingo as your kind of up and coming developmental guys, you may end up keeping five of these defensive tackles. And then Chris Smith got a big shout out from Dan Campbell the other day for his work ethic and his ability to just never tire and just go, 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 go. And so, yeah, it's a very strong group that's looked very strong in training camp and the preseason, and they've looked strong without playing McNeil, Reader, or Pecco in the
The three
games.
best. Yep.
Yeah, so it's going to be a different group. I think I think they've done okay in the preseason, but I think you're going to see a totally different group for those people who haven't been out at training camp when you get the actual big guys that you want on the field versus the Rams in week one. So I think you may end up keeping five, and I think you can justify it, but Pecco's spot could be really contingent on Reader.
Those interior guys, not worth nothing, but they only surrendered 74 yards rushing to the Chiefs, right? With using that group. All right, so moving outside of those guys, going to this, I don't know, it's not hybrid. You would call it the five technique at times. These are guys who can play inside, play outside. Levi Onwuzurike, Josh Pascal, Pat O'Connor, and
Yeah,
then
let's just stop there.
stick with them. All right.
Yeah, let's just look at, if we just look at those three guys, because in a four-man front, those guys are going to be at a defensive tackle spot. Well,
Maybe.
Onwuzurike and maybe O'Connor. Pascal will probably be outside in a four technique or in a four-man front. In a five-man front, they're going to be kind of at that five, which is technically like an interior defensive lineman, right on the offensive tackle. They're going to be lined up right at that offensive tackle. Onwuzurike is a lock. He's not going to play. He's going to be a guy that is going to be heavily involved throughout the season. They don't want to risk him. Pascal, I think, is in a great spot. His ability to play, edge in a four-man front and then kick inside in a five-man front, that's valuable. I think he's locked in. And I think O'Connor, who had a good first game against the Giants, struggled against the Chiefs, and he's got a much tougher road. But I do think Onwuzurike and Pascal are both locked in on this roster. And so this is where it gets interesting, because now you're like, oh, we already got five defensive tackles. If Onwuzurike is technically a defensive tackle, are you now keeping six defensive tackles?
It's got
Yeah,
flexibility.
that's the thing, is where these, because he has that flexibility and because they run that kind of hybrid front, I don't know where you put him. You could argue he's an edge, you can argue he's an interior guy. And so this is where I encourage people to not get caught up on, oh, they're keeping six defensive tackle. Like, don't worry about that. Because of how they flex their fronts, they're going to just look at it as linemen as a whole. And if they're probably going to keep like 10 or 11 defensive linemen.
They kept 11 last year, if I remember right.
Yes. And so, yeah, they started out with like 11 defensive linemen, 11 defensive backs, and then six linebackers, which if you add those up real fast, that's
28.
28, right? And so technically, you typically on average, it's 25 defenders, 25 offensive players. So they started out with 28 defenders and then only 22 offensive players, because they needed more bodies on defense
We
because
might
of the
see it
scheme.
again.
I do think my projection is probably going to be real close to like a 26-24 split. That would be my guess. But I think 11 is realistic, and when you add, take the five I talked about earlier, plus Pascal and Onwuzurike, that gets you up to seven, and then that means you're probably looking for four. Maybe you take five edge guys, to try, and maybe that bumps your defensive line up to 12, but I think four is probably going to be their target.
All right, so we talk about edge guys. Aiden Hutchinson, obviously not going to play. He's making the team. James Houston, Isaac Okwu, Derek Barnes, obviously making the team, not going to be playing. Marcus Davenport, Mitchell Agudé, Matthew Betts. Those are the edge guys.
All right, so Hutchinson and Davenport, they're locked in.
Yeah, it's Davenport's in too, yeah.
Yeah, Hutchinson is going to play 95% of snaps on one side of the ball. Davenport will play a backup or a starter role depending on what the front looks like. Those two guys are locked. After that, you're probably looking for one more guy. And then maybe, like, if you want to count Derek Barnes here, you can count him, or you can count him off the ball. I don't care where you want to count him. But Hutchinson and Davenport, and then you're probably looking at least one, and maybe you can justify a second. So Houston has been dealing with a knee injury. He was limited this week. He missed the last couple of games, then he was limited this week. I don't even know if Houston will play. If I'm him, though, I absolutely want to play
Right,
because I think Houston's on the bubble.
which is crazy,
Yeah.
for what
Well,
he did 2 years. I know it's what have
here's
you done for me lately? Like,
here's
has he
yeah.
developed at all? Right.
Here's the trick is they did him no favors by asking him to play and try and develop him into a Sam role. And then when they opted to, because you kind of put him out of his element, you didn't allow him to show off the things that he's really good at. Then when you decide to take him away from Sam and just put him at defensive end, that's when he gets hurt. And so now you didn't even get to see the stuff that he's good at. You really didn't see it like at the whole training camp. You really didn't get a chance to see the one thing that he's really good at, because you were either he's either injured or trying to learn a develop into a new role. So if they think Houston still has that pass rushing potential, that he's not, didn't lose some of it in his injury from last year, then he's going to make it, because the ceiling is just so high on him. He's going to make it. But if they think he lost a step, or they think they can't develop him, then he becomes vulnerable. A guy like Ukwu and Agude, those guys have been pretty steady, pretty consistent. They've shown some flexibility. They've started using both those guys. They've tried them both at the Sam. Agude has shown a little bit more ability to try and maybe stick at the Sam. They don't really have a Sam backup behind Derek Barnes, and so maybe does that give Agude an extra edge, or an extra, feather in his cap? Because again, the more you can do, or is Ukwu's ability to get home? He's got a couple, at least two sacks in the two games. Is his ability to get home maybe enough that they think, man, we don't want to lose him? Because again, he was a guy that Dan Campbell brought up unprompted, and talked about how he was playing well. And so I do think this is a closer battle, and that's again why I don't know if it's going to be Houston plus one of those guys, or maybe one of those guys instead of Houston, or maybe both of those guys. Like it's really kind of up in the air. I could see one or two of that group of three. One of that group of three is going to make it. Is there enough room for two? That's what I don't know. I think Betts is too far out on the edge.
Yeah, it's
It's a
too
little too
bad.
late. He'll get a chance, I
Go
think,
back to
to
Canada.
well, he'll get a chance to go practice squad too
Right.
and develop himself. But yeah, he never really came into his own. And so the other guys kind of ascended and he didn't.
All right, let's talk off the ball. Linebackers. Derek Barnes, we kind of mentioned him in with the edge rushers. Certainly on the team. Certainly won't see him Saturday. Alex Anzalone, Jack Campbell. Definitely not going to see those guys on Saturday. We mentioned Malcolm Rodriguez earlier. He's still injured. Won't see him Saturday. These guys are all on the team, though, right? Jalen Reeves-Maybin, president of the NFL Players Association. He's on the team, not for that reason, but he's on the team. But very important special teams. Got four guys beyond that: Ben Neiman, Abraham Beauplan, Ty Summers, and Joel Igbuebunwe.
Hold on. I had
The phonetics.
and then I lost it here. Hold on one second. Let me see if I can find
He's not making the team. Please don't make the team. Although we will see him later in the year
it.
once injuries start to ravage the ball club.
It's Iabuniwe. Iabuniwe. Iabuniwe.
Iabuniwe.
Yeah. That doesn't sound right, because that's different than what
No.
I read earlier. But yeah, I mean, that's a tough name. I don't, I hope I don't have to say that name more than once.
Relatively new to the roster.
I mean, he's brought in for depth because, look, Jalen Reeves-Maybin has had to play a couple in both the games
He's
because they
playing a
just don't
lot.
have the body. He's
Yeah.
played well. He's played well too. He's done nothing
But I don't
to,
know. They shouldn't waste him. You know?
I think they have to. Like, I
There's
just
just
don't
not
think,
enough
yeah,
depth. Yeah.
I guess. But I'd personally not play him if I didn't have to.
Yeah. We know what he can do.
I'd stay comfortably with the five that I know, and then just let Neiman and Beauplan, Summers, and Joel, the new guy, just let those four guys play it out. Like, Neiman is been the starting Mike. He's been the guy, relaying the play calls. He's got an extensive special teams background in the NFL. And so could he be pushing for a linebacker six spot? Maybe. I think Beauplan and Summers both showed some good athleticism against the Chiefs. Does that help them with their case maybe for a practice squad? I think it does. I don't know if they have really good, I don't know if they have outside shots at trying to squeeze in for an LB6 job, but in my mind, I don't know if they keep an LB6.
I was
I
going to
think,
ask, like, is that a lock? Is six linebackers a lock?
I don't think it is. It was in the past, but I don't think it is this year. Some of that being because if you're keeping a guy like James Houston, you're getting the same body type that you want for that role on special teams. Or if it's Ogude, like it's this game, you're getting that same kind of body type. Even Uku, the same thing. You can say, all right, I'm getting this type of body guy for my special teams LB6, a guy that I've used in that LB6 role in the past. So I don't think six is a lock by any means. And I think trying to fit a six guy is tricky. And again, this is a spot where if you were keeping two quarterbacks, I'd be more apt to consider it. But if you're only keeping, if you're going to end up keeping three, I think this is one of the spots that is an easier cut than some of the other positions.
Now we're going to go back to the defensive secondary. We got to we'll break this up tinier like we did the defensive line. I kind of like that. First with the nickel corners, Amik Robertson, Rashad Wild Goose. Amik's definitely in. We'll probably see him Saturday, right?
He had a little bit of an undisclosed injury that limited
Oh.
him on Tuesday. Then he didn't play on Wednesday, and so I actually wouldn't be surprised if they finally rest him. They were playing him a lot in the first couple of games, but I have a feeling he's not going to play, which means you're probably going to see some Wild Goose, and you're probably going to see, a couple of the other guys that have taken snaps in the slot, like Lauren Strickland, the safety, who's taken a lot of nickelback snaps. He's a guy who maybe he even starts. So, I think they'll rest Robertson, but he's making a roster. I agree with
Right. All right. Now, outside corners,
you.
Carlton Davis, Terrion Arnold, Ennis Rakestraw, Khalil Dorsey, Kendall Vildor, Stephen Gilmore, Javelin Guidry, Ehsan Bassey. There's your eight outside corners. We won't see Davis. We won't see an Arnold. Rakestraw's hurt, right? Will we not see him?
Rakestraw came back this week,
Okay. All right.
so it's possible you see Rakestraw. At the same time, I could also see them saying, yeah, I don't want to risk it. But if he does play, he might also see some snaps inside a nickel. Like, I
Right.
think there's a chance. A Dorsey Vildor combo on the outside to start
What
would
we're
not be
used to seeing.
surprising. Yeah. And then if they went with Dorsey and Vildor on the outside and Rakestraw at nickel, wouldn't surprise me at all. If Rakestraw sat, again, wouldn't surprise me. If Rakestraw played outside with Dorsey, that also wouldn't surprise me. Like, I think there's a lot of options that could happen depending on what they want to do with Rakestraw. But I think the bottom line here is Davis and Arnold are your starters. Rakestraw is probably your most preferred backup. And then Dorsey is right after that. I think Dorsey is a clear in the clearly in the two deep, and he's a tremendous special teamer. And so that puts him in. So
So we're
that
at
means,
five defensive backs so far.
And I think because of the injuries to Davis and Arnold, and because of Vildor really starting to come on of late, I think there's a really easy way to justify keeping him because of your five, Dorsey is the only one that isn't injured. The other guys are either injured or coming off an injury. And so keeping Vildor to start the season makes some sense. They've tried Vildor on special teams in a variety of different ways. And so a Dorsey Vildor starting this game, plus also having an inside shot at the roster, makes a lot of sense to me. Gilmore has really fallen off. He was limited on Tuesday, looked like he was practicing in full on Wednesday, according to the reports. And so, could Gilmore surprise and then, all of a sudden be the guy we saw in the third preseason game last year? Maybe. But he's got a tough road. Bassey, Guidry, those guys both have tough roads because they've only been with the team, a week. And so, they're talking, they're, you know, those, that type of guy is typically fighting for a practice squad or trying to justify a practice spot on a practice squad, which is, legitimate. Gilmore, I think, will be the favorite because they've invested in him. But at the same time, if he's getting beat, then I think they wouldn't hesitate to
Let's
turn to
check out one of these
the
other
other guys.
guys. But
But I think right now I'm leaning Vildor is in as cornerback six, somewhat because of the injuries, somewhat because of the new special teams rules. And I think he's also been playing very well.
so the six so far: Carlton Davis, Ennis Dragstra, Kendall Vildor, Terrion Arnold, Khalil Dorsey, Amik Robertson. Those are your six corners. All right. Moving on to the safeties: Brian Branch, Kirby Joseph, Ifeanyi Melifonwu, Brandon Joseph. You mentioned Lauren Strickland, CJ Moore, Chelan Gerrans.
So Branch will play some nickel, especially when Robertson is unavailable
This is in a regular season
in a
game,
regular season
not
game.
on Saturday.
On Saturday he won't play at all. Branch was limited a couple weeks ago, didn't play in the game, came back this week, but seemed to play in full. So he should be okay. Kirby Joseph has been fine. Both those guys will sit. If he
Been
has
hurt.
been hurt, he did not practice this week at all. So I'm not expecting to see Ify in this game. Ify's probably okay anyways. He's probably in that kind of safety three role. But very much nipping on his heels is Brandon Joseph. And I think Joseph right now, from a defensive perspective, is clearly the fourth best safety on the roster, easily. From a special teams perspective, CJ Moore may be ahead of him, though. And that's where this group gets trick it gets tricky is are you going to keep four? And then if you are, would you rather have Brandon Joseph, who's a better defender, or would you rather have CJ Moore, who's a better special teamer? At the same time, maybe there is room for both, because last year you kept 11 defensive backs, and if you keep
That
in
puts
six
us at
safeties,
11 here, yeah.
You could easily go with five. And then the wild card is Strickland, because Strickland has done the kind of Brian Branch role, which is I can play safety, but I can also play in the slot. Strickland's the guy that's gotten Dan Campbell's attention, and he's just with he can do a little bit of everything. And so for this player that's going to be in that kind of safety five or maybe even safety four spot, it's got to be someone who can do multiple things. Moore can do multiple things. Strickland can do multiple things. Joseph, I believe, can do multiple things because you add in special teams as well. I also think Brandon Joseph is probably your best center fielder after Kirby Joseph. I think Brandon Joseph has a lot of center field range, which is, again, appealing. So there's probably six guys in the mix. And in my estimation, you're probably going to keep five. So probably got Brandon Joseph, CJ Moore, and Strickland fighting for two spots. All
All
of them
right.
should play.
Do we want to come? Right, well, we're not done yet. I was going to say, do we actually want to come up with the 53-man roster at the very end of this?
I think it'd be hard because there's still a bit of a game, but I mean,
And somebody's going to get hurt. It's not
yeah,
going to work out
sure,
anyways.
it seems like that. But I feel like I think we've done a what we've
We're
done here
pretty
is I think
close. Yep.
we've laid it out where there's a handful of spots. Campbell said there's five or six spots that are open. I think, we've laid out maybe eight spots that are open, maybe nine, but we kind of know what this roster is and really which guys to watch for the last couple of positional battles.
We are at 24 offensive players, 20, it's 26 or 27 defensive players. We're right on it. All right.
Okay.
Special teams group, Jack Fox in, Jake Bates in, although he can't hit extra points. Field goals, no problem. Extra points are an issue. Scott Daly, Hogan Hatton is the long snappers. Hatton has the flexibility to get in the linebacker mix.
Do you have a gut feeling on Daly versus Hatton? Because Hogan Hatton has been getting the first team reps for the last few weeks. At the same time, Dan Campbell has gone on record saying the reason Hatton's getting getting snaps is because he has to prove he can do it in stressful situations, whereas Daly has already proved he can do it in situations. So like it's kind of like at quarterback where it's like you're hearing the same,
How do
hey, the
we know
veteran,
he's better?
yeah, the veteran's been here, so we know he's good, but the younger guy has got a high ceiling, so we're going to give him a lot of run. Have you noticed Hatton is getting downfield pretty quick,
Well,
like
it's
on
because he's
punts
the
and
linebacker. He's versatile.
I wonder how much that is going to impress Dave Phipp.
I don't know. Do you
You know what I
really think
mean?
it's that important?
I don't know.
There's 32 other long snappers that don't do that. Here's one guy who does.
I can tell you that snapping the ball is going to be more important than downfield pursuit, right?
Right.
Because you snap the ball on extra points and field goals that don't have any pursuit at all, right? And so snapping the ball, you snap the ball a ton more than you run down the field. So I don't know. I kind of lean Daly here because he's been there, done that, and he's trustworthy. I could also see them saying, man, Hatton is kind of this, he's kind of a rare guy who can, you know, that ability to cover is something unique and that they might lean on him. But it's a coin flip for me though, because I have not watched Long Snapper close enough to really have a strong opinion either way.
Jack Fox last year, 59 punts, or not last year, 57 punts. 2 years ago, 52 punts. That's how many times Hogan Hatton will be running down the field. Right, that would be it. It wouldn't be on maybe a field goal if the other team returns it, right? That would be it. So that's not an insignificant number. Right.
No,
So I
but
don't know
if
if
you
it
start
truly makes them a weapon in any way. It's going to be who's ever better at snapping that ball.
Yes, I agree with you. And that I think I don't have the answer to.
No, I don't think nobody. It's got to be them watching in practice. Like, how could we evaluate that? Why? I mean, you get to go to practice, so maybe it's a little different, but when you're watching the game, like every one of those guys just fires the ball back there, and it's. We take it for granted now, and for good reason. But like at the same time, it's like, look at these guys firing it back there. It's 18 yards on a rope from between your legs. And tons of practice, they'll be able to do that. But still, an impressive feat. Obviously, impressive enough that you have a guy that's his only job on the team, and every team does that. It's not like eight teams do this. It's all 32, and it's been that way for decades. It's an important position, but at the same time, like. You can find 32 guys that can do it real well.
If
So
he,
they'll pick the right guy. Yeah.
if anyone listening wonders why teams keep a long snapper, Google Bill Belichick explains long snapper, and
I
you'll
was
get. You'll get like a 15-minute
going to say
video
you
of
need
him
some
talking
time
about
on your hands. Yeah. It's not a
it.
YouTube short. This is full.
He was asked about why teams keep long snappers, and he gave like a 15 or 18-minute dissertation on it and explained it going all the way back in history. It was something. It was the whole presser, basically. He just did a filibuster at his press conference one day talking about the long snapper.
Still unimportant in video games. I mean, the backup center is the long snapper. That's just what it is.
All right. Anything, out there that I said that you kind of disagree with, or that
No.
you want to put your mark on a guy or two that I was questionable about, and like where you're feeling stronger about one guy than
No,
I am? Okay.
those days are gone, Eric. That's pretty cut and dry.
Yeah,
At the
they.
same time, and plus the more years we put in doing this show, and the more I'm watching the end of the roster, it's the handful of guys that aren't going to make the team are still going to play during the season. These guys are going to get hurt. Like it's inevitability. Guys get hurt, and
What?
if Isaac Uku doesn't make the team. He's going to be playing in week eight because, you know, two guys are hurt on the defensive line. So, like, I don't know.
I
The
think that's
53, it's not the biggest thing anymore to me. Just like starters, right? Guys
Well,
play, guys have roles. And same thing with this. It's like, well, these guys didn't make the team. We're going to see them.
they're going to have 16 spots on the practice squad. So when you add the 16 spots to the 53, then that gets you up to 69 players. So of this 90-man roster, there's a good chance they keep 69 of those 90 players. Now, they don't always keep all their practice squad guys from their training
Yeah,
camp roster,
right.
but they
There's one or
usually
two
keep,
guys come from somewhere else.
it's usually like 14. So it's probably closer to like 67. So if you're looking at this roster and you're like, man, I'm going to hate to lose some of these guys. Well, you're probably going to lose, there's probably going to lose a couple guys that, you know, get poached or claimed by one of the teams that isn't as deep. But like, there's a good chance that like 67 of the players that are in training camp right now are on the Lions regular season roster in some capacity. So there's still going to be a lot of these guys that, you know, we're talking about as bubble players that are going to be there. And then, like you said, could get called up because of injury at different points. So, and honestly, based on usage, based on opportunities, you could probably go through and pick out the 2023 players pretty quickly. You know what I mean? It's the you're there's only going to be a couple of guys here that, you know, are going to be, I don't know, maybe a handful of hard cuts, and then you're going to risk losing those guys. But that is the price you pay to have a deep roster. Now you're going to lose guys to other teams, and that's just the way it works.
Tom Kennedy didn't play in a single game last year.
I know. Surprising.
It
They
is, because I was going to make another point about, like, we do this every year. Like, Tom Kennedy's not making the team. He's going to play, but he didn't play in a game in 2023. 2022, 2021, different story. I think he played like in 19 total games between those 2 years. But that's what's going on. That's what's going to happen on this team. Like, I don't think there's going to be any. I mean, maybe there'll be a shocker. We don't know what it is. It would be on the defensive line if it's coming from anywhere. If there's going to be a shocker of, oh, I can't believe they cut that guy, it's on the defensive line. And I don't know who it's going to be, but it would be there, or Mitchell or Zylstra. That's it. That's probably, otherwise, I don't think we're going to see many surprises.
I don't either.
Or both of Mitchell and Zylstra. Oh, they got rid of them both, you know.
It's interesting, when I was debating keeping four receivers versus five receivers and four running backs versus five running backs, I went back and looked at like their usage last year, like how many receivers did they use on any given game. And they started the year out with four in week one, and then they basically went to five receivers like the whole rest of the way. And I think there was a game or two they had six, but for the majority of it was five receivers. Whereas running back, it was almost always three. Occasionally you had four if you had one of the starters hurt and you were bringing up like two running back, two depth guys to kind of fill in, but mostly those guys played on special teams. So like, I do think as an offensive concept, they really want to keep five receivers if possible. And but I don't really think the talent is there to justify it. And so that's where it gets tricky this year. I wouldn't be surprised if they keep four, kind of like they did last year to start the year. They only had four. And then maybe they change things up and you know, add another guy in week one or just after week one. But receivers, you know, it's one of the big storylines. I think that it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out over the next, you know, 5, 6 days.
Are you laying out your draft board yet?
You know, like my list?
The
Yes.
2025 NFL draft.
Yeah, I have my list made.
Do you, it's got to be wide receiver. Like, what wide receivers are the Lions looking at? But we were playing that game this year in the draft and it didn't
Oh
happen.
yeah, certainly. I have about 20 to 40 guys to watch at every position. for the college football season, because that's coming up. That's going to kick off. Is that this
Tomorrow? Well,
weekend or yeah, is it this
is there a game
weekend? Wow.
tomorrow? I mean, it's
Wow.
Thursday, so
Yeah.
I know Delaware State's plane didn't make it to Hawaii on time, but they're still going to play like they were going like on Tuesday or something. But it's starting this week. Week zero is
Yeah.
this week.
Okay. So I have my watch list kind of in my Excel document, but I haven't started prepping any draft watch lists or anything like that, like players to watch. But yes, yeah, certainly there's going to be positions that I'm going to be looking a lot heavier at this season than I have in the past. But like you said, wide receiver, they don't seem as worried about it as everyone else is, and I'm
Yeah.
interested to. There may be a reason that we don't know about until it kind of reveals itself.
Six games on the slate for Saturday. Big ones, Florida State, Georgia Tech, SMU, Nevada. Those are the two games where we've got all the FBS, where all both competitors are FBS schools. New Mexico hosts Montana State. We got Norfolk State, Florida A&M. I got some smaller schools. The Hawaii Delaware State game is Sunday, and I'm betting it was Saturday. They probably moved it back a day because of the missed flight. Or I could be totally wrong. And then we start. There's a bevy of games on Labor Day weekend. Bevy of games on Thursday. My beloved Spartans will play on Friday night, and then your Wolverines will begin their title defense on Saturday.
Nice. I'm gonna be honest, I haven't even looked at their schedule yet. I'm gonna do
It's more
that.
challenging than it's been in years
Oh,
past.
sir, I know who they're playing. And I agree with you with that. I just don't know when. Like I don't know like the order, I don't know the times. I'll get that in once the roster kind of gets
I think they
shaken
play
out.
on Saturday. I think that's Fresno State, and I think they're playing like at 7 o'clock at night,
Okay.
7:30,
Yeah.
NBC, I think.
I kind of hate night games at the same
Same,
time. I
yeah.
kind of don't mind them as I'm, because noon games are really hard for me to watch. So personally, I think I can sit in front of the couch at 7:30 a little easier than at noon.
Old man alert as well.
Yeah.
Like we grew up with like they played at noon, or actually
Yeah.
it was for the most part like Michigan usually did play at noon, and then Michigan State
Yeah.
they would try to they would stagger them. There was like a period there in the 2000s where it would be Michigan would play at noon, or the Spartans play at 3:30, or it would be reversed.
Right.
And but they would never play. It would be rare they play like one night game a year. It's oh they're playing Notre Dame at night. This could be huge.
Yeah.
Now
Everybody,
it's all out the window.
it's the Wild West out there now,
Right.
man.
Yeah.
It's college football is a new entity. And I mean, I don't know. I'm still not used to the I'm still not used to the reorganized divisions and stuff like that yet. That's going to
No.
take some adjusting,
Yeah.
but yeah. Well, I will be at the game on Saturday.
I'll be there with you. Not in the
Nice.
booth. I'll be down with with among the folks.
It should be fun because I think the atmosphere will be fun just because it'll be the only, it'll be the first game in a long time there. So I think people will be excited. And I think there's enough diehard Lions fans out there that care about that back end of the roster. You know what I mean? That they'll be very interested in the players that are playing in that first half and potentially second half, because I do think it's going to be a thinner group out there this week.
There is going to be a lot of, but at the same time, it's going to be the celebration of the winding down of summer. It's probably going to be going on in that stadium too. I don't know. Is it going to be packed? I don't know.
I don't think it'll be packed, but I think it'll be a fair amount of people there. I think the excitement, that we talked about at the top here is exciting enough to draw people's attention, even in the preseason. So.
I think you're right. All right, no movement on reviews on Apple Podcasts or well, Spotify might have moved up a little bit, but there's no fun reviews to read, so we can't do any of that. So we thank you all for listening, and I'm sure the reviews aren't cranking up because nobody even knows if we're on anymore. They may have thought we retired. Like maybe they're not doing the podcast this year. You're a little spotty during the summertime. I think we're
Well,
back on track now.
we're on track now. We're gonna stick with these Thursdays, and next one we do, we'll talk a little bit about the roster
That
that
final roster.
the outcome that has come out of it, and then the one after that is Rams. So
Yeah,
we're
yep.
in it.
Matthew Stafford comes back home
It's
again.
gonna be, yeah, Sunday night football. That place is gonna be rocking for that.
Yeah,
That's for
no, yeah,
sure.
that's going to be a big one.
Certainly.
All right, that's it. That's all right. Do you have anything else to add?
Nope. If you're going to the game, enjoy it.
Yeah. That's it. And everybody watching at home, like, see a handful of these guys that you're not really going to see too much of until like the middle of the season time, sometime when guys start going down. So that's it. That's all we got for this week. So until next time, let's go Lions.